My guest at this time is Stacey Honowitz. She is a longtime prosecutor in the state of Florida with a well-recognized track record of tracking down and convicting sexual predators. In addition, Stacey is an author and speaker committed to helping parents recognize the signs of sexual abuse and how to discuss the issue with your children. The issue can be especially difficult when the perpetrator is someone the parents have told their kids they can trust, like USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar. Stacey joins us to offer some critical advice. She is also the author of My Privates Are My Privates, a book geared at teaching kids when someone is approaching them in an illicit way. And Stacey, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really happy to be here because this is such an important topic, especially now, like you just said.
Absolutely. And, I think times are changing and people realize that the stereotype is not the same anymore. But I still think a lot of people have this notion that the predator is a sleazy-looking guy in a trench coat. But from your experience, where and how does most of this kind of abuse happen?
Well, you're 100% right. That's the first vision somebody gets in their minds. You know, somebody in a trench coat, naked, wearing glasses, looking kind of creepy. And, you know, when we do these cases, we have come to figure out, and I've seen in all my years, 30 years experience, it's not that person, that stranger. It's normally somebody that you know. It could be someone within the family. It could be a coach. It could be a rabbi. It could be a priest. Sex crimes really knows no boundaries. Anybody can be a predator and anybody can be a victim. So that's what we're primarily dealing with. And what we do in my office is we prosecute any and all. I mean, if the crime has been committed, we go ahead and we prosecute.
Stacey, teaching kids to stay away from strangers is pretty simple compared with situations like we've just discussed where we tell kids to trust their doctor or trust their teacher or, like we saw last decade, their priest. How do we get kids to go to places we assume are safe but still get them to remain aware of what's going on around them and what might be abuse?
Well, I mean, that's a great question because now kids are so involved in after-school activities, clubs, things at the church, things at the temple. So kids are always going to be around someone, an adult, who they trust and who the parents specifically trust. And that is the problem because we don't educate the kids enough to tell them that anybody can commit a sex crime. Usually, and what we find is somebody who is so trusted are really the ones that are usually the master manipulators because they know that the kids trust them. They know that the kids aren't going to report them. They know that the kids have this bond with them. And so they feel that they can manipulate the child, but if they do something wrong to them, that child's never going to come forward. And that's the education part of it. That's what we're trying to get out there, that you have to tell your kids, even if you love them, even if you trust them, they can always do something to betray that trust. And you can never feel funny about telling mom or dad or somebody that you feel uncomfortable, even if you think to yourself, this could never be happening. And that's what we saw in Nassar. These girls never thought that this elite doctor who was training the Olympic athletes would ever do something and cross the line. And so they didn't know to report it, and they didn't know if something was wrong. You have to teach the kids, just like my privates are private, just like I said in the book, and no one is allowed to touch them. Even if the person tells you, I'm doing it, it's okay, you know, I need to do it for my job. You have to be willing to tell these kids that even though it might be difficult, even though you think that this person is wonderful, that if they're doing something to your body that makes you uncomfortable, if they're going near your private parts, nobody has a right to touch them, including people that say, I'm helping you or I love you.
What's the right age to bring this up with the kids, and what's the best approach? I guess you kind of described that to some extent, but how detailed should you go? How much is proper for kids to know at the point where they need to know this stuff?
Well, you know, parents always are very quick to show off their kids. Show Tommy, show Stacy where your head is, where your nose is, where your eyes are. And we play that game with little kids all the time. Where's your elbow? Where's your knee? And we're so proud of them when they can show us that. Well, now when they are starting to learn about their private parts, you have to be able to tell them that's your private. And you have to say it in the terms that are proper. So you don't want to make up a name for a vagina. You don't want to make up a name for penis because you want them to know that this is part of their anatomy and nobody can touch them there. The thing that I find so interesting is that it's the parents that are ones that are so embarrassed to talk about private parts. If you teach a child very early on at 3 years old that that's their private, that's their vagina, there's nothing embarrassing about it. Just like if there's their elbow. They don't know any different. They just know that's the name of my private part. So that's the first thing, teaching private parts teaching where it is on their body and letting them know no one can touch them there. Now, certainly each case is different because each child grows up differently. Each child is maybe more mature than another child. You know, as a parent, you'll be able to gauge whether or not your child is taking in the concept that no one can touch them there. And it's for you to make that decision, but you have to start early on from when you're teaching body parts. You have to, you can't eliminate that. You can't leave that out because you feel it's uncomfortable. You need to tell them very early on, that's your eyes, that's your nose, that's your mouth, that's your vagina, and that's your penis. And then you have to specifically tell them, those are areas that you know your underpants cover or a bathing suit covers, and it's covered because it's private and no one can see it and nobody can touch it. So you have to gauge it as a parent. You're the one that knows your own kid. You have to be able to tell them early on and then keep it as a constant conversation. This is not a one-time deal. This is a constant conversation that you need to have with the kids.
We're talking with Stacey Honowitz. And Stacey, you also talk about the importance of parents being able to recognize signs of abuse, even if the kids aren't saying anything. What are those signs?
Well, generally what we see, and we see it in a lot of the cases that come in where there's a coach or there's someone in the family that's spending, a lot of time with their child that doesn't really need to be. And a lot of parents feel that if someone's taking such an interest in their child, it's wonderful. And I'm not here to tell you that every coach in the world or every person that's nice to your kid is a sexual predator, because that's just not the case. But if you see things, if you see conversations, text messages, that the person wants to take your kid when you're not around, tells you they're going to babysit, I'll take them to the movies, something that you think, it doesn't pass the smell test, there's something, the relationship is just reeking of something that's not kosher, you need to ask your kid, what's going on? Why are you spending so much time? Why is he giving you presents? Why is he taking you there? Why is he asking if you want to babysit? Why is he taking you to a practice when you don't have a practice today? So you just need to really kind of be smart. Use your common sense. We all think that this is such a major thing, you know, that it's rocket science. It's not. It's common sense to see that someone wants to spend a lot of time with your kid and you're trying to figure out why.
Is there an approach that you think is most effective in getting the best responses from your kids? So on the one hand, you're not freaking them out as to why are they asking all these questions? Maybe I am being abused. Is it just a natural, casual approach to make sure that you're getting the most accurate response from the kid?
Yeah, you never want to make it scientific. And when I wrote my books, I never did it as a guide. You don't ever want to say, step one, tell me what happened. Step two, did he talk to you? Step three, you don't want to do it that way. That's why the conversation starts early and very casual. Listen, if anyone touches you there, I want you to feel comfortable enough. If you think, if he's giving you gifts, if he's asking you to do things that you don't want to do, if he's telling you to keep secrets that you don't want to tell, you got to tell mom, you got to tell dad, don't worry. We'll take care of it. Even if, you know, so many times the perpetrator will say, listen, if you tell somebody, I'm going to do this to you, I'm going to hurt your family, I'm going to hurt you, you're going to be in trouble. And listen, you got to tell the kids, listen, if you tell me, if you feel comfortable enough to tell me, you don't have to worry, you'll never be in that position. He's never going to hurt me, he's never going to hurt your family. But if you don't tell me what's going on, you will be a perpetual victim. So it is done in a casual manner, and that's why it's an ongoing discussion. It's never just sit down and let me tell you the do's and the don'ts. If you notice things, or if you just say to your child, listen, you've got to feel comfortable enough, I can help you. If someone's hurting you, if someone makes you feel uncomfortable, then just don't be afraid to tell me. Nothing's going to happen to you. Something will happen to them. It's never going to be your fault. You're the kid. They're the adult.
Stacey, from your experience of over 30 years of dealing with this, if kids do make the allegation, is it most of the time true, or do some kids make stuff up because they might not like people?
Well, listen, we see there are false reports. There's no doubt that in my 30 years of doing this, I have seen it before. And it's, you know, we have to vet that out. And the way of doing that is to interview the child to see what's going on in the background, to see if maybe there's a divorce where mom hates dad or dad hates mom. And so they ask the child to say somebody touched you. I mean, this is what we do in my field. You know, when you're doing it for a long time, when you learn the tactics of interviewing children and cross-examining so that you are able to determine if they're telling a lie or making things up, then I'm here to tell you that not every case gets filed and not every case gets prosecuted. There are some cases where we know that the background and what's going on, if there's a divorce, if the kid is in trouble, if the kid doesn't like the coach. So we have to be able to kind of make that determination. And we do. We have to do it. And there are cases that, never get filed, that never go forward.
Stacey, I think we've seen it from a number of cases, from Hollywood to USA Gymnastics, like we talked about. And some people feel like even if they think their child is absolutely telling the truth and there's been horrific abuse, they're not sure what to do about it, because if it's a well-respected person and your kid's the only one that stepped forward so far, the system is probably not going to assume you're telling the truth. So what are the steps to follow when it looks like the deck is stacked against you?
Well, listen, in a lot of the cases, the deck does look like it's stacked, because the person who's the perpetrator normally is in an authoritative position and maybe very well liked in the community. But you have to remember something. Lots of times when we take these cases, what happens is somebody comes forward. We do an investigation. Lots of times, if it does involve someone that's very well known, the police issue a press release. And we have seen, just like in the gymnastics case, there is strength in numbers. Many times when you feel that your child is going to be the only one, it doesn't work out that way. If your child comes forward, lots of times other people will come forward because somebody else has taken the step. If you think you're in a David and Goliath situation, where the person is so much more important and has so many more people that will believe them, you still have to go forward. First of all, you're under an obligation. If you think your child's been sexually abused, and if your child has told you they've been sexually abused, with the reporting laws that are out there now in a lot of the states, you yourself can be prosecuted if you don't come forward and report it. You have to remember that you will be in good hands, that the prosecutors and the investigators and the forensic interviewers are there to help you. Even if you think you're in the worst possible posture, just remember, someone is going to investigate and someone's going to look at it. Don't ever think, I'm not going to come forward because nobody will pay attention to me. That's not the case.
And finally, I would assume the default, at least at first, is to believe your child.
Absolutely. Listen, if you have a history of a child that lies all the time, that you're having issues with, and that child comes forward and of rage or something else screams to you, oh, by the way, I've been sexually abused, you are under an obligation to talk to find out, to investigate, to ask questions, and then to go to the police. And let the police and let the investigators who are trained specifically in this type of law to take the bull by the horns. But you as the parent have to take the first step. If you turn your back away from your child, if you tell your child you don't believe them, you can't imagine if that child is being sexually abused what kind of secret they have to live with for the rest of their lives. And we saw it happen in Nassar. We saw that one of the fathers didn't believe his daughter. And when everybody started coming forward, the guilt that he lived with, he ended up committing suicide because he couldn't live with the guilt. And that's the problem. I mean, that's, you're in a very fine line. I know that this person is well respected in the community. Is it possible that someone could actually be doing these things to my child? And the answer is, I'm going to go to the authorities and I'm going to let them decide and make the decision and look at the evidence and decide whether or not. So, yes, the moral of the story is, if your child tells you they're abused, take action.
Stacey, great advice. Good tips all the way around on a problem that is so horrific, but is very real. And so thank you very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.
Stacey Honowitz, longtime prosecutor in the state of Florida, especially related to sex abuse cases. She is also a speaker and an author. Her book, geared towards kids and understanding how to protect themselves, My Privates Are My Privates. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.